a doctor in exchange for using his power as a U.S. senator to help him. Defense lawyers argued those bribery charges should be thrown out. They point to a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling which narrowed the definition of bribery. The court overturned the corruption conviction of Virginia's former governor. Menendez, now in a wait-and-see mode.
We will make our case in court when the time comes, if we need to move forward on a case.
Any thoughts on the judge possibly dismissing the charges?
That's for the judge to decide. We'll see.
Scott Pringle, New Jersey.
No major sanctions imposed on the University of North Carolina after an NCAA probe into alleged dummy classes. The NCAA says it could not conclude UNC violated academic rules when it made paper courses in African American studies available to the student body, including student athletes. USA Radio News.
For many businesses, hiring is tough. You want access to highly qualified candidates fast. And you don't want to sign a long-term contract or pay upfront fees. That's why you need Indeed.com, delivering six times more hires than any other job site, according to independent research. Indeed is offering new users a $50 credit to give their first job post premium visibility as a sponsored job. Redeem this offer at Indeed.com/credit. That's Indeed.com/credit. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Testimony in the trial of a man who's being charged with setting a woman on fire is bringing up interesting testimony about her apparent last words. Here's Randy Bell.
Witnesses have said this week that Jessica Chambers identified her attacker as someone named Eric, and a Panola County Sheriff's investigator says before arresting Quentin Tellis for the crime, they looked at a lot of men named Eric or Derek.
More than 15, I know, but I don't know an exact number.
But none of those panned out as a suspect. Prosecution is trying to convince the jury the conflict over the names was just a misunderstanding. The director of the burn center in Memphis, where Chambers died, said he's treated a lot of patients with severe burns.
And it's very hard to understand what they say.
Testimony continues in Batesville this morning. Randy Bell in Jackson.
A New Orleans police officer has been shot and killed in the line of duty. Correspondent Chris Barnes has this story.
The officer shot early on Friday morning while patrolling on the east side of the city with another officer. They were in their cruiser when they saw something suspicious, prompting them to get out of the vehicle. That's when a gunman opened fire, hitting the one cop several times. The other officer returned fire, hitting the gunman, who then ran inside an apartment and held police at bay for hours. Eventually, he surrendered. He's now being treated at a hospital. I'm Chris Barnes.
And today may be Friday the 13th, but a press release from emergency room doctors says there's no actual increase in visits to the ER today. USA Radio News.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our program.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com, and I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 in Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org. You're listening to 100inChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the 100in County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@100in-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy 100 in, buy local. Visit www.100inchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
One, two. Good afternoon. It's the law. My name is Bill Wolfson. I'm an attorney here in Flemington, and I've got two guests with me today while we're waiting for John Manfreda. We have Tom McCade, CEO and co-founder of Alliance Wealth Management, and Paul Esposito, CFA, the Chief Investment Officer, also of Alliance Wealth Management. Alliance is both a full-service financial firm. In addition to wealth advising, they also have a core staff of certified public accountants and other financial professionals who can provide our listening audience and the general public with all sorts of financial services, whether it's investments, tax advice, business planning, business valuation issues for succession planning, or if there are unfortunate circumstances like a divorce or a shareholder's dispute. Additionally, Alliance Wealth Management are registered to assist you in buying and selling and transferring investments such as stocks, bonds, and they can put you into things like IRAs, 401ks, annuities, and many, many other financial vehicles. So, gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, very excellent.
Okay,
excellent.
Well, I'm at the opposite end of the financial spectrum because a lot of what I do involves bankruptcy legal cases, but we also litigate corporate cases where there are shareholder disputes. We also represent a number of homeowners associations, and we help people not with residential real estate transactions, but with corporate or commercial transactions. So, one of the things I wanted to talk about today and that I hope you can help me out with is, what do you see as the number one problem that prevents people from doing good, effective retirement planning?
Well, Paul, this is Tom. I'll take a stab at it first, sure. And then if you want to interject. So let me just kind of back up and paint a little bit of a landscape here and sort of some of the changes that we've seen. So, it used to be that many companies would work there for a long time and you would have a pension, and so we call that a defined benefit pension plan. My father's a great example of that. He worked for went to high school, went into the Navy, came out, worked for General Electric for 40 years, retired with a pension. Right, so he had a pension, Social Security, and he was all set. Well. Corporations have changed from what they call a defined benefit, where you get a pension when you retire, to defined contribution. So you mentioned earlier, like a 401k plan. And so what that's done is that's changed the burden from the corporation to provide you with a retirement income stream to the individual. It's now the individual's responsibility. So I've saved some money, I've accumulated money, and and now I have buckets of money and pots of money. Now, how do I convert that money into the equivalent of my paycheck that I used to get? And I'd say that's probably one of the biggest challenges. How much do I take? How much do I draw? How do I do this tax efficiently? When do I elect Social Security? Do I do Roth IRA conversion? Do I not? You know, there are a variety of choices out there. And so, and that's really kind of the crux of why our business exists today.
I see. What about helping people to manage risk? We've seen a stock market that's done really well over the last 2 years. My investments are up. My IRA is up. The value of my house is up, although... I often wonder whether I'll ever get rid of the stink bugs that have just appeared. We've begun giving them names.
Yeah.
We're beginning to recognize them. Yeah. But as I suspect you're probably finding the same thing in your homes.
Yes.
But how do you manage the downside risk? Because the one thing we know is the economy is cyclical, whether you are an aficionado of Alan Greenspan or a Russian economist, Kondratiev, who talked about Kondratiev cycles of being embedded in the essence of capitalism, even the Marxist of the First Order. And despite that, Stalin had him shot, probably because he was right.
Yeah.
But how do you manage risk when so many people have their investments tied up in things that are indexed to the market? We can't be like people 100 or 150 years ago who buried gold in the backyard. We can't depend on being what I'll call flexible and nimble. And very few of us who have to work for a living have the expertise to time the market. I think that's for the pros. How do you manage that kind of risk?
I'll talk from a high level, and then I'll let Paul
give
some details.
Let's do this from a bird's eye view and
yep.
then from a tactical view, because I think that's a really important topic to throw in here.
Certainly.
So what we're talking about is what we call asset allocation. I'll try not to get too technical in terminology, but asset allocation is how much do I have in stocks, how much do I have in bonds, how much do I have in cash? And it's first understanding what our investments are. What's the purpose? Why do we hold these investments? So stocks, we're looking for growth and some income. Bonds, we're looking for primarily for income and for some stability in our portfolio. Cash, we're looking for that for our emergency reserves and paying our bills, right? So understanding what those components are. And then understanding the time horizon. So if I'm 40 years old, versus if I'm 70 years old, I have a different time horizon, so I might be able to take more risks. So we start by really saying, what's the objective? We really start by trying to put together the outline of a financial plan. And a financial plan is simply saying, what assets do you have now? How much are the income can we expect those assets to produce? And how much are you spending? And so that's really going to be – so when you talk about risk, it should be measured in terms of actual dollars. So how much do those – how much dollars need to be produced by those investments? Is that all of my money coming from my portfolio, right? And so – and then depending on where we are on your time cycle, your life cycle, if I'm an accumulator – I can be investing and I can afford the ups and downs in the market. But if I'm living and dependent upon that, well, then I should have my asset allocation should be more weighted towards bonds, towards fixed income, those that's going to generate some income for me and not be as susceptible to those big market fluctuations. So it's a great question, Paul. Anything you want to add into that?
Yeah, well, I do think that risk management is probably one of the aspects of investing that investors really fail to consider. Investors tend to primarily be focused on rate of return, right? Return on capital, not necessarily return of capital. Our investment methodology really focuses on risk-adjusted return first. So we look at what is maximum drawdown for a particular strategy
before we look at what potential rate of return we can get. And to, you know, to Tom's point, looking at asset allocation as a really a key way to help navigate the markets is critical. So when we look at right now, you talk about valuations in the marketplace being, you know, exorbitantly high. There's a lot of reasons for that. We could talk about central banks ad nauseum as the primary catalyst for overvaluation. There are a number of metrics out there, whether it's the Shiller cyclically adjusted PE that points to a stock market that's extremely high. We could also talk about the Buffett rule, as indicators there. But if you actually listen to Warren Buffett these days, he's still fairly bullish on the equity market, and a lot of that has to do with the current inflationary environment we're in, which is, you know, relatively low.
We have low inflation. We have low interest rates. And as a client of mine said, Bill, it almost doesn't pay to have money these days.
Right.
Many investors, just like many creditors that I represent, when there's a bankruptcy case, likes to say, what am I going to get and when am I going to get it? And in terms of retirement planning and asset management and risk, we want to avoid the risk, but the other thing we need to do is we need to talk about the risk both from bonds, from stocks, because, you know, the market goes up and down. And most of us are familiar with fluctuations in the Dow because you mm-hmm. see it on the news.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we know that with bonds, there's an extra risk. Number one, they could be junk bonds with a high rate of return.
Yep.
Number two, unless they're tax-free, you're paying taxes on what you earn. Additionally, you also have the problem of default in bonds, whether you invested in Puerto Rico or you invested in Harrisburg, where we've seen bond defaults.
Yep.
And as a bankruptcy lawyer, I'm sensitized to those things because nobody ever expects the government to go broke.
Right. So let me just talk about our approach. When you're talking about investing in bonds, there's really two primary things that we're looking at in terms of risk. One is interest rate risk, and the other is credit risk. So interest rate risk is if interest rates today, let's say interest rates are 2% today, okay? So if you have a bond that's earning that amount, if interest rates rise and they go to 3%, the bond that you own that's paying 2% is going to decrease in value, okay? So that's just one idea of interest rate risk, okay? Credit risk is the risk that if I lend you that money, if I buy that bond, I may not get my money back. So we're balancing two things constantly. Where do we want to be on our credit risk, the U.S. government being the most safe haven, versus, you know, do we want to be out to junk bonds? So the trade-off, why wouldn't you just have everything in U.S. government bonds? Well, they're paying you the least amount of interest. So they're the safest, but they're paying you the least amount of interest. Where, yeah. mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Now, one of the things you mentioned is a term, I call it a term of art, junk bond. What do we mean by a junk bond?
Yep. So I'll give an example. So we'll keep this real simple. So you have two friends, okay? One friend is very financially responsible, okay? The other friend is not so financially responsible. You're going to loan the same amount of money to two friends, okay? Those same two friends. The friend who's so not so financially responsible, you may require a higher interest rate back because you put more risk, right? The risk of you not getting your money back is higher with that friend than the other friend. So therefore, the yield on that bond, the stated coupon rate, the interest rate on that bond would be higher. So when we look at that, we talk about high yield bonds, aka junk bonds. So the rating requirements kind of shifts over time, but it's generally your higher yielding bonds. And what you're doing is you're saying, I'm willing to take a little bit more risk, and in return, I'll get a higher interest rate.
Right, but that's not usually tied to something that's tax-free because generally the built-in advantage is that the 3 or 4% that you get is compensated for by the fact that you're not going to be taxed on that bond, say on a state, they had a New Jersey bond or something like that.
Or like a municipal bond. Right.
Great. I know that in a few moments we're going to be breaking for a few commercials, but this is a very interesting discussion to me. John, do you have anything to weigh in on?
Well, good afternoon. Let's go to the break and we can come back and sort of, reset.
Okay. Well, let's hit that. Let's hit our mark so that we can manage to be staying solvent here. And I'm going to hit the money button.
This is Chamber President Chris Phelan inviting you to the 29th Annual Business and Home Expo with our restaurant showcase. This wonderful event will happen on Thursday, November 9th at our new location, Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington from 2 to 7 p.m. If you're a business or organization and would like to participate, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at huntertonchamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, huntertonchamberradio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, huntertonchamberradio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good afternoon. We're back with It's the Law. I've got my guests, Tom McCabe, Paul Esposito. I'm here with John Manfreda, my otherwise buddy and sports guy. Pat Smith is off this week. She's out watching her Green Bay Packers after they've celebrated from beating the Cowboys, an event that I always like, considering that my Philadelphia Eagles had a great night last night. But we're here to talk about money and investing and the kinds of things we can do to preserve wealth and to grow wealth during fluctuations in this economy, and also to preserve wealth through the various problems that many business owners and other people might have, including professionals.
Yeah, Bill, to that end, we're actually going to do a program at Alliance Wealth Management on, I believe it's a Wednesday, November 1, anyway, 6 to 8 p.m., and it'll primarily deal with financial planning, tax planning, and estate planning. There'll be plenty of room for questions and answers. So if folks have questions ancillary to those items, Bill, such as what you were just talking about, business owners, credit risks, things of that nature, there'll be professionals there such as you and myself to answer some of those questions. But Steve, Paul, how do you see that program playing out? We open at 6 o'clock, and what can the public expect at this program?
Yeah, I think what we'll do is we'll primarily cover those topics. By the way, it's at 23 Royal Road in the Farmers Insurance of Flemington building, and there's a really nice space there.
Very good.
Tables,
very
chairs. Good. We'll have it, very interactive. Mm-hmm. We'll have a panel. We'll do a discussion with Q&A as we go through. So live Q&A.
Excellent.
So bring your questions if you have them. Mainly focus on the areas of investments, taxes, estate planning, financial planning, those sort of things.
Yeah, and there'll be even time to talk about things like life insurance, yeah, or disability insurance, all those asset protection type issues, yep, that are tangential to tax planning, yep, and wealth management. Because as Bill was pointing out before, it's not just about how much you save, it's what you keep, what you can protect in the end.
Yep.
Exactly. Well, you know, in the long run, somebody once pointed out, I think it was Babe Ruth, we're all dead. unless you are King Tut or one of the pharaohs, you can't take it with you. They tried, but it got dug up.
Yeah.
So the problem that we face as professionals, whether we're attorneys or we're financial advisors or accountants, is we have clients that depend on us to figure out how they're going to hang on to what they've worked hard for. One of the things that I've always been very interested in and that I've worked with John on time and time again are asset protection trusts and spendthrift trusts. Very often we'll see a family where maybe there's a child who's had some trouble, whether in business or whether with personality or emotional issues, or maybe they've made bad choices.
Or all of the above, Bill.
Or all of the above. And so the parents of this adult child will sometimes set up a spendthrift trust, which can't be invaded by bankruptcy trustees or other creditors, but has the advantage also of, in effect, letting the letting that generation have their have mom and dad's cake and get to eat it too.
Right.
And the thing that I've always wondered about, because John sets up spendthrift trusts very frequently, is what do you as financial advisors like to see as the assets of those spendthrift trusts? I'm very interested in that issue.
Okay.
Sure.
So, go ahead, Paul.
Well, first of all, I think it's imperative that, you know, based upon the goals of that spendthrift trust, that a focus of total return is something that I think needs to be front and center. Many times, you know, you will see investment outfits focused totally on growth, totally on income, especially given the market environment we're in right now in the short run, as well as for the long run, total return focus. And by that I mean focusing on your short-term returns via dividends, interest income, so that you're being paid to wait, so to speak, for the asset classes that you have. But then also not just bleeding the portfolio dry, but siphoning out as much income as possible, but also having capital appreciation potential, so that that portfolio does have the ability to weather the effects, eroding effects of inflation throughout time.
You know, it's interesting what you mentioned, and it was an excellent summary. But Bill, I mean, to novices like you and me, it sounds like a bunch of different things. So would it be fair to say, Paul, that you're talking about sort of balancing the various things, kind of like what Tom was talking about before with the interest rate and the bonds?
Yeah.
You know, you want to invest with bonds, and you want to make a loan, and you want a good interest rate, but you got to consider the risk and so forth. And, you know, people generally relate return on investment to, you know, the degree of risk you take. But you've gone beyond that. And I guess in your practice, you drill down much deeper than those of us would who are just lay people in with regard to financial, because you're talking about the underlying issues of income production, principal protection, and so forth. But I mean, I think that the average investor has trouble understanding a lot of that, where it's coming from. So what do you guys propose? What do you do for your clients that would help to, you know, sort of explain that?
Yep. I'll give a shot at that, John. So from a basic level, just like you were sitting down with an individual, it's another entity. You have to understand what we're trying to accomplish before.
The big picture.
Right. What are we trying to do? Right? Because everybody's in different needs, different situations, right? So is this something that I need to draw income from this trust today? Is that the goal? Well, then you'll invest that differently than, hey, is this something where I don't need the income today, maybe I'm younger, but I need this to protect against inflation future, then we invest that more in a growth allocation to what Paul was talking about.
So
just like anything, it all starts with the same thing. Sitting down, what are we trying to accomplish
before we set out to build it, right?
So to Bill's question about what do you want to see, which is very, as somebody who drafts these trusts and Bill litigates some of these trusts, I assume you would want full investment powers in the hands of the trustee to be able to have the investment component work.
Absolutely.
So let's take this from the bird's eye view and work down. The first thing is, let me give you what I'm going to call, we call in law school, a hypothetical. Let's say we have a 40-year-old woman with two kids, and the husband is no longer around for whatever reason, and she's not really able to make more than $700 or $800 a week, and she's going to live within 20 minutes of mom and dad, who are in their 70s, want to see their grandkids, obviously, and want to know that their daughter, who is not ever going to be a big earner, is going to be provided for when they're no longer around, and they have made their own extended care arrangements, perhaps, and they've taken care of some other things.
Yep.
So they think that what they need to do is to spin off for her over a continuum of perhaps 30 or 40 years, maybe $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 a month until she's eligible for Social Security, assuming it's around, and that kicks in.
Yep. So I would start with that. What do we need to produce?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, start with that, and then we can back into where do we want to be in our investment, going back to the word I used earlier, the asset allocation, because that will drive how much do we need in bonds, how much do we need in stocks, how much can we keep in our cash reserves. So we start with the result. It's very similar to when we sit down with someone who's going to retire, and they say, hey, I'm going to need to spend $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year. Okay, start with that. Back out maybe Social Security. Maybe they're getting $30,000 of Social Security. So now it's like, okay, I need to produce $70,000 per year. John, we were talking earlier that in today's world, there's not many pensions out there. It used to be defined benefits, so it's pensions. So now I've saved, $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million, whatever, in my 401k. How do I convert that into producing whatever it is that I need? And that's really where we start and say, okay, if this needs to produce $70,000, okay, let's back into that. Maybe we can earn 3% interest and dividend yield on that. And so, what is our nest egg need to be? What are we accumulating? So
I like that phrase you used. Let's start with the result.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Bill and I have trouble doing that in our practice.
That's the whole reason why we do what we do. We want to achieve a result for a client.
That's right.
So we start with that. We appoint a trustee. Maybe it's one of you guys, or it's a corporate trustee like a bank.
Yep.
And then we then have to figure, we draft the Spendthrift Trust.
Yep.
We then need to understand that right now we want to generate, say, $2,500 a month off this fund, this investment. So what kinds of financial vehicles are you parking mom and dad's money in? And how much do you think you need?
Yeah, well, so we use a number of different investment vehicles, but primarily we're a huge proponent of exchange-traded funds for a number of reasons. One has to do with cost. Two is transparency, and three is also tax efficiency.
Now, what is an exchange-traded fund?
Exchange-traded fund is a pooled vehicle, much like a mutual fund.
Mm-hmm.
They usually tend to mirror an index, although they can be active in management. And
I guess the real question, what's the difference? You said it's kind of like a mutual fund. That's the point. The nomenclature there, the exchange. What's being exchanged?
So it's a pooled vehicle that can trade on an exchange like a stock. So if you wanted to own the S&P 500 per se, there's an ETF by the name of Spiders, SPY is a ticker symbol. You can buy it and sell it throughout the course of the trading day and get participation as if you were owning the entire basket of the S&P.
As opposed to a mutual fund, which only trades at the end of the day, So the mutual fund does a calculation at the end of a day, adds up all its assets and liabilities, cash, and it comes up with something called a net asset value. And then you can only, after they compute that net asset value, that determines the price.
So basically you're dealing with a very dynamic change in asset values throughout the day with a spider.
It gives you the diversification. It gives you the diversification of a mutual fund, but the flexibility of trading it just like a stock.
So why is that flexibility to the advantage of the parents of this 40-year-old lady?
Yep. And I'll tell you one. I will answer that. And there's one other advantage. Paul mentioned costs. So in a mutual fund, you're paying a team, a portfolio management team,
to identify. You've got to spend your 4 or 5% before you get in the game.
Exactly. Whereas in an exchange-traded fund, it's an algorithm that's driving, and so there's no human making subjective purchases and sales. We are the ones who are deciding which exchange-traded funds to be in. So you save a significant amount of cost. Then there's a tax advantage, whereas a mutual fund, there's two layers of taxation. And I'll try not to get too technical, but I'll give an example. So the stocks, let's say it's a stock mutual fund, because you're going to bond mutual funds. Let's say it's a stock mutual fund.
Okay.
All right? So this stock mutual fund, as that manager trades and buys and sells and generates, let's say, capital gains, those are distributed out to the holder of the mutual fund. An exchange-traded fund has the advantage when they swap out their positions internally inside the fund, that's not a taxable event, whereas in a mutual fund, it is a taxable
event.
Well,
in a mutual fund, you're actually buying and selling.
You're buying and selling, right.
The ETF is swapping assets.
Correct.
So it's more like a 1031 exchange of some type.
Yes, that's so right. You could have the same transaction. In a mutual fund, you could buy whatever, Amazon, and sell Microsoft. If that
so
same
that's
exchange,
the nature of the exchange trading. Okay, the typical notion of trade that Bill and I understand would just be you buy and sell assets.
Right.
Here, if you have 100 shares of Merck in your portfolio and you want to have 100 shares of XYZ, you want to have, instead of 100 shares of Merck, you want to have 50 shares of A and 50 shares of B, what the fund would do would be exchange the,
right.
I guess, with whatever the commensurate values are,
right.
And wind up with 50-50 of the other two.
Right. So exactly. And that's not a taxable event.
Does that assume that the fund already owns that stuff? Or how do they acquire it? With other ETFs?
No. So the ETF would have a very set designation in terms of what it's supposed to do, and it has an algorithm. So, for example, the S&P 500. It is always going to own the 500 in a weighted average, the 500 largest stocks. So as one stock increases in value, you will automatically own more shares of that stock as another stock inside the fund. As the stock decreases in value.
Oh, I see. So you're not actually owning the stock. You're really on paper owning. You have a certain monetary value of Merck stock.
That's right.
So if the Merck stock goes up.
That's right.
Okay, I actually own fewer shares.
So it's always weighted. So you may actually own more shares depending on how it is relative to the other. So we're diving in a little technically
here.
Yeah,
it's getting a little too deep. Yep.
So I think let's just bring it back. So the exchange-traded funds, why do we like them? Well, they're more tax efficient, okay, lower cost, and you get the diversification that you go in a mutual fund, but you have the ability to trade it intraday like a stock. So
what this is doing, as I understand it, is it's allowing you as an investment advisor or as a trustee in one of these for the fund that mom and dad have set up to essentially adjust to market forces, preserve capital, and make sure there's still the right income level in that the parents want to see their adult daughter have each month.
That's right. That's
so that's the sole focus of this exercise.
Correct. That's correct. It's actually an ideal tool for portfolio construction as opposed to picking individual stocks or trying to take an active stance on the S&P and maybe only owning certain sectors or maybe only a handful of 50 of the S&P 500 companies. It also allows us, because if you look at portfolio construction theory, the asset allocation is the key driver behind your return and your risk parameters. So that being said, we, utilizing the various exchange-traded funds gives us exposure to all of the various broad asset classes, whether it's global equities, global bonds, or global fixed income, real assets, as well as all of the respective sub-asset classes.
Hey, so, Paul, let me ask you, in terms of the ETFs, are there sort of generally minimum amounts? When I hear of ETFs, I usually hear more substantial investors that are involved. How does that work? If somebody had, $250,000 to invest, could they do that?
Absolutely. Okay. ETFs can, from an investor that has, maybe only a few hundred dollars all the way up, even into the tens of millions of dollars. Surprisingly enough, you're actually seeing a major shift in institutional money actually abandoning a lot of active strategies and migrating into the passive or the indexed approach by utilizing a lot of exchange-traded funds. Cost is critical.
So the advantage then to my hypothetical family is that you are adjusting where you put investment money in order to keep heading towards the same goal. In effect, you're like sailing a boat. You're trimming your sails based on economic winds of change in order to get to the same destination.
That's right. There's two things that once we determine the asset allocation how we want it, right, then there's ongoing management, trimming the sails. So a couple of things will happen. There'll be rebalancing on a regular basis. So, for example, if you started out with 50% of your money in stocks and 50% of your money in bonds, we believe that over time the stocks will increase more than the bonds will. They have different functions. The bonds are producing income, but the stocks are increasing in value. Well, if you start out with, let's say, 100,000 in stocks and 100,000 in bonds, what's going to happen over time? You're going to have more than 100,000 in stocks, so you won't be 50-50 anymore. So you need to rebalance back to your 50-50, because otherwise, over time, you'd be more heavily weighted to stocks,
How long do you recommend that a reasonably prudent investor, a reasonably prudent parent or couple come in and meet with you to be sure that these changes are going the way they need? How often do you need to take the temperature of this?
Excellent. So we'll typically meet with our clients formally twice a year, but we are monitoring the portfolio on a daily basis, and we'll set up parameters. So, for example, if we say you want to be in this 50-50, if stocks really take off and all of a sudden now you're at 65-35, we'll do that rebalancing without needing to meet with us. We're constantly monitoring
that. How frequently do you typically rebalance?
Well, it really depends. So, we do a job of managing cash flows on a quarterly basis with looking at dividends and interest that comes in through all of those vehicles and figuring out based upon, our conviction, our capital market assumptions in the longer term, we may want to tilt a little bit more toward equities. So we may adjust, we may decide to, just have the equity allocation be a little bit higher than what the original targets are. So we talked about risk parameters. So we do have what we call absolute risk tolerance or percentage tolerances ranges that you set. So if you start with a simple allocation of 50% stocks, 50% bonds, we will at times let the allocation run as high as 55% stocks and 45% bonds. But then there also are relative weightings as well.
Very good. Gentlemen, we need to take a quick commercial break, and let's hit the money button.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians
and specialists. We're talking about money and where to park it.
Your full circle of care.
Bill, thanks very much. Back on to some of our investment discussion. Tom, Paul, we
for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Now we're really back with It's the Law Show. Pat Smith is out in the middle of the country. God knows what she's doing, but it's got something to do with football. And we have two guys here from Alliance Wealth Management, Tom McCabe, the CEO and co-founder, and Paul Esposito, the Chief Financial and Investment Officer, and John Manfreda, one of the trust lawyers, one of the finest trust and estate lawyers I know at Gebhardt & Kiefer.
Well, thank you, Bill. Flattery will get you everywhere.
It usually does. Okay. Back to business, guys.
Apropos of what we were talking about, and again, the perspective that we're coming from as laypersons, Bill being a creditors' rights bankruptcy commercial lawyer and myself a trust and estates probate lawyer, estate planner, there's an article I read that touts the U.S. as the most investor-friendly nation in the world. And it goes on to say we received the highest score for top grades in low fund expenses and strong disclosure practices. And I guess, Bill, if you think about it, you want to invest with somebody, you want top performance and low expenses and transparency. So, Tom, Paul, how do you promote that for your clients at Alliance?
And remember, folks, a lot of foreign money comes here because we have a stable economy despite what happened in 08, and we don't seem to have a lot of political unrest. So very, very.
There are those who might dispute that. But, Paul, Tom, can you comment on that?
Absolutely. I think that those characteristics are, you know, the hallmark of a well-developed capital market structure.
But we're talking about at Alliance. Alliance Wealth Management in Flemington, New Jersey. What do you do to promote those two items? Transparency, performance, low cost funds. How do you guys address that for your clients? Yep.
So what we do is we are what they call a registered investment advisor.
An RIA.
Okay. So that's regulated. Going back to our regulation, the SEC regulates us. Okay?
Okay.
And so we don't hold client funds. This is very important for those, right? Remember everybody, Bernie Madoff, the problem was he held the funds. He was the custodian as well as the investment advisor. We use third-party custodians such as Charles Schwab or TD Ameritrade.
So there's the transparency.
Exactly. So clients get statements from Charles Schwab, And we are advising and managing those
assets. And when they
get
an email from Tom and Paul and you're in Cancun, they don't have to worry about, well, gee, am I buying them their margaritas? It's 5 o'clock there, and who's paying for those margaritas?
Exactly. So that's really for the transparency. And if you look at what we were talking about earlier, the exchange-traded fund market, right? That didn't exist, or in a very small way, 10 years ago. And people see the ability to have the lower cost of diversification, and many of the mutual funds are migrating to the exchange-traded funds.
So somebody saw an opportunity and developed that.
Exactly. And what are you getting? You're getting a lower cost and the ability to trade these investment instruments throughout the day. So what do we do? We're always looking out for our clients in terms of making sure that their portfolios have low cost, diversified, tax-efficient investments that are guaranteed. Did I use the guarantee word?
That word doesn't exist.
In our world. Yeah, there is no guarantee.
No.
That are geared is what I was trying to say, tailored to their needs.
Yeah. So it's obviously people are interested in performance. And another question I have for you is, like you, we practice here locally in Hunterdon County, but Bill and I have substantial clients both in the area and out of the area. And I think a lot of people listen to us and they think, oh, wow, big investment company and high-powered lawyers. But what folks like Bill and I try to do is always tell people we're lawyers for the people. I mean, we have a lot of individual clients. We give personal customized service. I guess my impression of Alliance is that you are able to do that for the folks here locally. You've chosen to put your business in Flemington, New Jersey. Tell us why.
Yeah, perfect. Because our clients are primarily in this area. We have a team of 12. We own the company. So it's a boutique sort of environment backed up with the resources of a TD Ameritrade and a Charles Schwab. So it's very personalized service.
So you're local, yet you have connections, or you are connected with the sort of leaders in the industry, so to speak.
Correct. So that gives us scale. That gives us efficiency. Yeah.
Now, what if folks want to come in and meet you? I know you have a beautiful office, been there many, many times. And again, we're doing a wonderful program there on November 1. Bill and I will be there too. Jerry will be in the crowd, but we'll also be available to say a few words if we have to, because as everybody knows, Bill, you and I are never shy about saying a few words. Yeah. But Wednesday, November 1 at the Alliance Wealth Management office on Royal Road, what can folks expect to get from that program? Can they get to meet you guys? Can they get to sit with you? What if they have a confidential question? Will you go into your office with them? We want to make this a program that people are really going to benefit from.
Generally, great question, John. Generally, what we do is we encourage anyone who wants to attend, bring your questions, and we'll evaluate. If that's a question that we can answer in front of everybody, we'll happily answer that question.
Absolutely.
But if it's a question that requires
let's say somebody brings their portfolio statement in, okay, XYZ, and says, well, here's my portfolio, what do you think?
No,
that's going to be a tough one on the spot.
Correct. And we're happy. We'll have a consultation. If somebody wants to come in, absolutely a free consultation.
So they should feel free to bring anything in to at least let you look at it, and then you can set up an appointment later.
Yep. And we'll happy to review that. No
So in a sense, it's hypothetical. You're teaching the public, but you're willing to go one-on-one with people.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And people have gotten tremendous value out of that. And we are a relationship business. We're not a transaction business. We're not selling you something.
Right.
We're in
Bill and I can
in
certainly
a relationship.
Relate to that.
We have this saying for our clients: you're the CEO of your life. We're the CFO. So you tell us what you want to do.
I think my wife and your wife might sound something different, Bill. But I like the way Tom put that, and I'm sure Paul will endorse that.
Yeah. But, right, so if you have a special needs situation, okay, let's figure out the best way to do that, most tax efficient, financially sensible way to do that. If your retirement dream is to have a place in Florida as well as here, let's figure out how we can get there. But I'm not going to dictate to you that you need a house in Florida.
So the client can come in and not just say, here's my portfolio, manage it, but they could also say to you, well, here's our retirement dream. Here's what we'd kind of like to do. How do we get there?
That's the integral part of what we do.
And that's absolutely what separates you from, let's say, having an account at Charles Schwab.
Correct.
With no management advice.
And that's why we have the tax together with, and then we partner with gentlemen like yourself for the estate planning. But the tax and the investment's an ongoing every year sort of thing that's integrated in. Right. And that's exactly why we set up the company.
One other quick question I'd like to delve into, because I know Bill is very knowledgeable in this area as the commercial lawyer that he is and bankruptcy and commercial rights. But let's say you have somebody who's a fairly high wage earner. They're working for a large company and they've got a very nice 401k. They got $1 million in their 401k. But their house is underwater perhaps. And then maybe they get in a car accident and they're sued and there's a judgment and they had a few bucks, but now that's been levied on by the plaintiff's lawyers. And so that now they're sitting with this $1 million 401k, or maybe they roll it into an IRA. How vulnerable is that stuff to creditors? I know there's some federal exemptions with that. Do you ever get into that with clients, or would you be relying on somebody like Bill to advise people on that?
That's where we would partner. We would partner with someone like Bill.
Okay, very
that.
Good. Because yeah, I know a lot of people have questions about, not everybody's walking around with $10 million and no debts or no threatened lawsuits or something. If people are being threatened with a lawsuit, I mean, keeping in mind the fraudulent transfer rules, that they know or should know that somebody's going to have a claim against them. But it seems to me that's when this type of planning is really necessary.
And we will quarterback that.
Okay,
there you go. We'll coordinate that for the clients, right? So we have a network of excellent resources, whether we do it in-house or whether we partner, whether it's long-term care or life insurance or whatever those issues or a credit situation, we'll partner. Just like we do in estate planning and things of that nature. Right. But we will do things internally or we'll partner. But we'll always be there. We won't just send the client on their way.
So that's where the personal service comes in.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Bill, that really answers a lot of my questions. I'll let you finish up with anything you might have on those notes. And again, we'll thank our guests for spending their time here today with us, and we anxiously await the November 1 program. But do you have some things to finish up with?
Oh, sure. I'm always interested in what you do for what I call the middle market client or the maybe the lower end client. I was shocked to find that almost over 70% of Americans haven't saved any money for retirement. And they're depending on either Social Security or getting lucky with a scratch-off they buy at 7-Eleven. Yeah. And to me, that's not retirement planning. And I see that our boomer generation is, quite frankly, headed for a catastrophe. It's going to require a tremendous drain on government resources and higher taxes for us earners. So what do you do for the person who spent a lifetime and never really made more than $50,000 a year? Maybe they paid off their $250,000 house.
It's a funny thing you mention that, Bill, because I know a lot of clients that we see who have accumulated a lot of money weren't high wage earners because they didn't earn as much, but they saved more.
Exactly.
We see far too many people who've earned a lot of money and spent more than they earned. So it isn't necessarily what the salary range is, it's what they were able to save and how they invested it.
Yeah. We have 2 minutes, so I'm going to ask you to give us all this great advice in 2 minutes.
Real quick. We start with financial organization, understanding really what you have. You'd be surprised if people, whether you're a high earner or not, they have accumulated, maybe they got a pocket of money here and this over here and this. That's really the first thing. We'll sit down with someone.
Proverbial hodgepodge.
Right, financial organization, because you have to have a strategy. Just like any business, if you want to be successful, have a good strategy. And that's really the first step, trying to figure out what those goals are, have a good strategy, and then we'll partner and with the client to create that strategy and then to carry it out.
In a nutshell, that's pretty good. Paul, some final comments for us.
It really ties back to the financial plan, knowing what resources the client has,
what their liability stream is going to be in the future, and putting together a realistic financial plan, not one that is filled with hopes and desires to win the lottery. So financial reality check.
I think that's exactly the words I would use. I think that's a wonderful thought, a beautiful thought, for lack of a better word, because that's really what I think a lot of people need is that financial reality check. And very often it's unpleasant, but from that you can certainly accomplish a great deal. It's just about any point in life. I'd like to thank Tom McCabe and Paul Esposito of Alliance Wealth Management for spending time today with It's the Law. And let's talk about, really briefly, once again, about your program. And
yes, November 1, coming up in a few weeks at the Alliance Wealth Management office, 23 Royal Road, right in Flemington.
Yep.
So we hope to see you all there. And Tom or Paul, could you just throw your phone number out again so people could call and possibly register?
Sure. It's 908-751-7090.
Thank you so much. We will do this again, gentlemen. We appreciate this. The second time you've been here, we appreciate your time. And folks, don't worry. We will have them back again after the first of the year. But get to that November 1 program if you can make it. Highly recommend it. Have a great weekend, everyone.
And it's time for the sports guys at 5 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and that somewhere is right here, Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce Internet Radio. But let's hear some news.